Welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Maves, your host for tonight's show. On this broadcast, we'll be featuring Jim Rubing, and he'll be answering your most important questions on Colorado's greenback cutthroat trout. The show will be 90 minutes in length, and we're broadcasting live over the Internet. If you'd like to ask Jim a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And while you're there, make sure to sign up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Just fill in your name and email address in the form on our homepage, and we'll keep you informed. The broadcast is being recorded. We'll be available for playback on our website within 48 hours after the show ends. So if you have to leave early, you can return to our website at your convenience and listen to the broadcast at any time. The content of this broadcast is copyrighted and is the property of the Knowledge Group, Inc. Doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. Recordings or transcriptions of this program cannot be distributed or sold in any form. When we return, we'll be talking with Jim Rubing about Colorado's greenback cutthroat trout. Tinkara USA, introducing the simple Japanese method of fly fishing outside of Japan. In Tinkara, only a rod, line, and fly are used, no reel. Tinkara is ideal for stream fishing, where the ability to precisely cast the lightest lines translates into drag-free drift and great control over the fly. You can learn more about Tinkara at a past episode of this show with Daniel Gallardo. Just search for Tinkara in our archive or visit their website at www.tinkarausa.com. That's www.tinkarausa.com. Well, before we introduce Jim, we'd like to let you know about the great gifts we have to give away tonight. For our drawing tonight, we'll be giving away a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and a one-year subscription to Fly Fusion magazine. So you have two chances to win tonight in our drawing. Now, if you haven't registered yet for the drawing, you can do so now. Just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and look for the link under Jim's section that says, click here to register for our drawing. Click on that link, fill out the form, and we'll announce the winners at the end of the show. We'll also be giving away a copy of Jim's book, Colorado Greenback Cutthroat Trout, courtesy of Frank Amato Publications. And if you'd like to find out more about what Frank Amato has to offer in the way of books, go to amatobooks.com. AmatoBooks.com. So here's how you can win Jim's book. You must be the first person to answer the question we ask at the end of the show. The question's going to be something about what we talk about during the show, and you must submit your answer along with your name and location using the text box on our homepage. So listen closely and use your best typing skills, and maybe you'll win Jim's book. Tonight, our guest is Jim Rubing. Jim grew up fishing the trout streams and creeks of southwestern Michigan. He began fly fishing when he moved west to Colorado in 1973 to pursue graduate degrees in biology and natural resource management, and has been fly fishing in the state's streams and lakes ever since. Beginning in the late 1980s, he's been actively pursuing the greenback cutthroat along Colorado's Front Range. Jim has served on the Colorado's Fish Health and Aquaculture Board for many years and has been a member of the Trout Unlimited for 25 years. He's also been a volunteer with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service for several years working on the Greenback Cutthroat Project in Rocky Mountain National Park. Jim, with co-author Richard Fritz, published Colorado Greenback Cutthroat, a Trout Fisherman's Guide, in 2009. Well, Jim, welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio.
Well, Roger, thank you very much. I'm really pleased to be here with you.
Well, we've got kind of a unique subject tonight, somewhat rare fish. All right. Well, listen, we've got lots of questions to go through on the greenback cutthroat trout, and let's just start at the beginning. And the big question is that, boy, we've got the name right in there, Colorado. Looks like we're claiming that trout. Can we do so? Is it native to Colorado?
Well, that's exactly right. It is native to Colorado. And an interesting thing about the greenback, and I think one of the things that got me really interested in it, is that it only occurs in Colorado. There are, I think, 14 subspecies of cutthroat trout. A couple of them are now extinct, 12 that are left right now, 3 that are endangered. But the greenback is interesting because historically and today, it's Colorado's fish. Just did not occur anywhere else. Well, I'll say maybe a few yards into Wyoming in the north, but not very much. It's basically our fish, and our state recognized it back in 1994. Prior to that, the rainbow trout was our state fish, and people said, why should the rainbow be our state fish? It's not native. It's introduced here. Let's pick a native fish, and it was pretty much decided the greenback cutthroat should be Colorado state fish. So ever since 1994, that's been the case.
And do we have any other native species of trout in Colorado?
Well, yeah, actually, there are three. When settlers first came out west, there were four, all cutthroat. We never had brook trout, we never had brown trout, we never had rainbow trout, grayling, anything like that. All we had was cutthroat. And those were the Colorado River cutthroat on the western slope of Colorado, the Rio Grande cutthroat in southern Colorado, streams leading into the San Luis Valley, and then the Greenback cutthroat all along the Front Range, and then a rather unique cutthroat called the Yellowfin cutthroat, and that was found only in Twin Lakes of down around Leadville. It was the only place in the state that one was found. And by the early 1900s, that one had gone extinct. And no one has seen that fish, I don't think, since about 1903. So we now have three of our native cutthroats are still in the state, but, you know, greatly reduced in where they were. Greenback basically was from, you know, the Wyoming border all the way down to southern Colorado. East went out almost as far as Greeley. And today it has about less than 1% of that original habitat. Maybe a 0.5% is all that's left. And likewise, the Rio Grande has certainly lost a great deal of its habitat, the Rio Grande cutthroat, and the Colorado River cutthroat on the western slope is also fighting for its space. But there are three native cutthroats still around today, and you can fish for all three of those.
Oh, I think you answered Joe's question from Austin, Texas. He says, I was going to northern New Mexico at the end of September. Any chance he may catch a Colorado greenback? Or is it primarily a northern Colorado fish? So,
yeah, and Joe, the answer to that is you're going to catch the Rio Grande, similar to the greenback. Both of those species evolved from the Colorado River cutthroat. But no, you won't find the greenback down there. You'll just find the Rio Grande cutthroat in northern New Mexico.
So you said they're related. So all three of these fish are related?
Yeah, it's assumed that during the last glacial period, some Colorado River cutthroat made it across the Continental Divide. Probably in the South Platte drainage, they came over, a group of them. And from that, and this is, we're talking maybe 8,000-10,000 years ago, the greenbacks became isolated and became their own subspecies then of cutthroat, and has been evolving ever since on their own path, separate from the Colorado River cutthroat. And the Rio Grande, similar. During the last glacial period, there was an occurrence where some fish were isolated in southern Colorado, and those have evolved into the Rio Grande cutthroat. So that's how we ended up with the three of them. They haven't been separated that long in evolutionary terms, I guess. 8,000-10,000 years is not a long period of time. But they've been recognized as three distinct cutthroat species.
Yeah, it's you say not a long time, but it's amazing how quickly animals can adapt and change for their environment. I think I mentioned on the previous show I was reading a book about they did an experiment down in the Caribbean with some guppies, and they put all the same family of guppies. They split them up. They all looked the same, and they put half of them in a pool that had sandy bottom and half that had pebbles, and then they just left them. Came back, you know, of course, they reproduced really quickly. They came back, I guess, a year or two later, and the ones over the sand had nice, smooth, colored backs, and the ones over the pebbles had dots all over it, too. both of them had adapted to camouflage for their environment within a short period of time. Of course, you got a lot of generations going past there much quicker than trout, but
That's true. For trout, it's not a real long period of time, and that's why you see a lot of similarities between these three subspecies of cutthroat.
Now, give us a little history then about the greenback. I mean, as I understand it, it's almost went extinct, but it wasn't always that way, was it?
That's true. As I said, going back, 8,000-10,000 years ago, it was isolated from the Colorado River cutthroat and started to develop here on the Front Range, and it only occurred here on the Front Range. When the first Europeans came to Colorado in the mid-1800s, what they found here was greenback cutthroat trout, and they found them by the millions. You read, it's interesting going to the library and reading the early accounts from the Rocky Mountain News from 1860s and 1870s, and the stories you would read about the greenback back then. People would bring them by the wagon load down to Blake Street to the market and sell barrels of greenbacks. A couple of enterprising young guys in 1870s, kept some of the mining camps going by just feeding barrels, bringing in barrels and barrels of greenback cutthroat. Dynamite being one of the favorite lures at that time, just throwing some in and having them come to the surface and taking all that they could carry in the wagons. And then also, sports fishing was incredible. You read some of the early accounts of the people. Looking at one here, this is from 1875. The speckled beauties, as they were called then, speckled trout, were caught in abundance, and there was no limit to the sport. Altogether, 1,000 trout were landed, varying from half to 2.5 pounds in weight. They packed up 100 pounds, the largest and choicest one, and started home. Upon reaching the railroad and opening the boxes, they found the fish had spoiled on their hands, and they were thrown away. The parties talked enthusiastically of the country bordering the river and evidently were well pleased with the trip. And you read account after account of that, people catching 500 to 1,000, and not just the South Platte Basin. Basically, the greenback occurred in two places, the South Platte and the Arkansas. It's assumed that somewhere around Trout Creek Pass, the greenbacks made it over that at one time, and they became another strain of greenbacks in the Arkansas River Basin. There were so many down there at one time that a person was contemplating starting a fish canning factory down along the Arkansas. So it was, Roger, very similar to the buffalo. There's no way you can run out of greenback cutthroat trout. They were taken commercially, and people thought there was no end to them. They're fishing with dynamite in any way they could bring them in. So there were millions at that time, but then there was a lot of fishing for them, and that was certainly having an effect on their numbers. But there was also mining going on. You look around the Leadville area, up towards the Eisenhower Tunnel, the mines, and some of the water quality was being disturbed as well. And cutthroat are a little bit like the canary in the mine. You get water conditions that aren't quite right. It's very difficult for them to spawn and to survive. But then the coup de grace that sealed the fate of the greenback was we introduced rainbow trout, and we then introduced brook trout, and we introduced brown trout. And one thing about the greenback, we can talk more about this later, they do not compete well. And so we went from having millions, like I said, you read all these accounts of how many fish there were. It's incredible. And pictures, too. Stringers and stringers of greenbacks. And then in 1937, it was announced by the Museum of Natural History in Denver that the greenback was extinct. There was not one left. And you have to ask yourself, how did we go from 1861, selling them by the bucket loads and the wagon loads, in, about 60 years, not one could be found in the entire state. So it was assumed that the greenback, 1937, was gone, was extinct. And for 30-some years, that was the story, that we no longer have the greenback. And fishermen, they like to fish, so basically the rainbow trout was brought in, the brook trout, the brown trout, and our streams. They used to be greenback streams. We're all stocked with these non-native fish. And I'll admit, I love to catch all those too, but it's kind of, it did seal the fate of the greenback. But then in 1969, an interesting thing happened. And what happened is in a couple of streams, Boulder County and up in Larimer County, Como Creek and the upper Poudre, they found some historic populations of greenbacks. And then after that time, the next few years, they found a few more. And you know, maybe a couple thousand fish were thought to still survive in some little small segments of streams that had not, you know, other fish couldn't get into and nobody had ever taken them out of there. So as you can imagine, a lot of excitement, because before that we'd found greenback, you know, like fish, but they were always crossed. They were crossed with rainbows, or they were crossed with a Yellowstone cutthroat that came in here. Nothing pure. So 1969, we had what we believed were pure greenback cutthroat. 1973, the Endangered Species Act was passed. And immediately, the greenback was put on that first list as endangered. And then by, I think it was 1978, the recovery had been taking place, and it was down to just threatened from endangered. And the recovery team continued to work on it and tried to establish the comeback of the greenback. 1982 was the first time they had enough fish that you could do catch and release fishing greenback. And part of the reasoning there was they thought people are going to care a lot more if you can actually catch them. And I'm sure that was true. It is such an incredibly beautiful fish. So in 1982, there was a catch and release. The recovery program was put in place. And from there, we've been trying to bring the cutthroat back, I guess, from the jaws of extinction, you might say. Oh. So it's an incredible story, and it's you know, really interesting. That, and that's part of the reason it is our state fish, kind of the comeback kid, I guess you could say.
Right. Well, I think a lot of people, even many fly fishers, aren't aware of what man has done with drawing and you know, promoting and producing fish by stocking and so forth. We did a show with Anders Halvorsen, and I don't know if you read his book, An Entirely Synthetic Fish, but it's study of the rainbow trout, and you know, everybody, rainbow trout are everywhere, and you think, well, maybe those are native fish, but they weren't.
Yeah, I think if you'd ask most people in Colorado, they would assume the rainbow trout is a native fish here because you catch it everywhere. It's ubiquitous throughout the state. And it is, our hatchery people have found it's very easy to raise. It's a very good hatchery fish. So,
and a good fighter. And,
it's a good fighter, And it's good to eat. A lot of things about it make it a very desirable fish. That's true.
Yeah, and all that didn't happen by accident, that's for sure. But it is amazing how a lot of these, you know, like you say, the brook trout, too. You know, I mean, you're in high mountain lakes, there are streams, and here's the brook trout. You know, here's the rainbow. And all that has been done, you know.
I was just up in the Lost Creek Wilderness this past weekend and, you know, fished Lost Creek up there. And I'm sure at one time it was probably, you know, a great greenback fishery. And today, nothing but small brook trout. That's all you'll find.
And so if you put those two together, eventually the brook trout will win out over the greenback. Is that what you're finding?
Absolutely. Shall we talk a little bit about greenbacks and competition?
Yeah, just let me take a quick break here, and then we'll come back and we'll dig into this some more. So give me just a few minutes, and I'll be right back. Housatonic River Outfitters offers the finest fly fishing products in Connecticut and fly fishing guides on the Housatonic, Farmington, and other waters. You have the option of wade fishing trips or drifting the river with their guides. In addition to the spectacular trout fishing, they offer guided fly fishing trips and spin fishing trips for warm water species. Please tour their website at www.dryflies.com to view the fishing products and guide services they offer in both Connecticut and Massachusetts. They were the first fly shop in Connecticut to offer drift boat guide services and have the largest established guide service in New England. To learn more about Housatonic River Outfitters, visit www.dryflies.com. That's www.dryflies.com. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Jim Rubing about Colorado's greenback cutthroat trout. If you'd like to ask Jim a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Okay. Before we get into competition, let's talk about a couple other things. You said the recovery, I'd like to dig back into kind of the recovery of the trout in more depth. Are we now running hatcheries and so forth and stocking throughout the state? Is that what's going on now?
Well, yeah, the recovery, like I said, this all started with the Endangered Species Act, and then we did the first recovery plan in 1977. There was a revision of that in 1983, and then in 1998 was the last recovery plan. And basically what they said, the goal at one time was to have the greenback considered recovered by the year 2000. And what they were looking at for that was a to remove it from the threatened list. You needed 20 stable populations on the South Platte River, a minimum of 124 acres of lake, and 31 miles of stream habitat, and a minimum of 5 stable populations within the Arkansas drainage. So that was the goal. You know, I guess a couple of things have happened, but it's found to be much more difficult than I think we had anticipated. You know, they say confidence is that feeling you get before you fully understand the situation. Well, I think everyone was confident in the 1990s that we'd be fully recovered with the greenback by this time. But that's not really what's happened. You know, they're still looking for to get enough stable populations going. As far as stocking, the Division of Wildlife has a couple of hatcheries that are doing broodfish. Their Bellevue hatchery has some greenback broodfish. And then the Pooter hatchery up on Highway 14 there and on the Pooter River has a number of broodfish that are produced there. I think something like 10,000 broodfish were produced last year. And two strains. They have the Arkansas River strain and the South Platte strain. And then I recently read that something like 1.5 million eggs were produced last year, and those are shipped to the other 10 hatcheries then to actually produce greenbacks for stocking, and those are done.
Now, in their plan, are they out to try to make these wild fisheries again? In other words, get away from the stocking of these fisheries and let the greenbacks produce as wild fish? Or as opposed to the rainbow stocking where it's a put-and-take stock in so many places. Jim? Okay, hold on, folks. Looks like we lost Jim. Let me know if you can still hear me if you just type in the question box yes, just so I know you can still hear me. And we'll wait for... I see Jim dropped off, so he must have lost his connection. He'll be back with us shortly here, so. Okay, thanks, Silas, for letting me know that you can hear me. Good. Well, we'll just hang tight here and wait for Jim to dial back in. Get his connection back. So hang tight with me. We'll do just that. Just out of curiosity, how many of you out there have caught a greenback cutthroat trout here in Colorado? If you can let me know if you have or not. That'd be great in our question box. Well, still waiting for Jim. Don't see him coming online here. So I'll have to hang tight and... hope he figures out he's offline. Okay, Brad in St. Charles said he caught one this June. Terrific. Yeah, I was backpacking a couple weeks ago and caught in Rocky Mountain National Park and was not fishing. I know you guys are going to go, well, what the heck's wrong with you? But we were just doing a lot of backpacking, hiking, and all kinds of signs up there, which I'm sure Jim will talk about. For the greenback trout, warning people that they are in those streams and they're trying to be, you know, reintroduced and so forth. Okay, Dan in Denver, I've caught greenbacks in Rocky Mountain National Park. Good. Yep, that's what we're talking about. So, yes, hi, and I don't know who this is, but someone has caught them up on Clear Creek near the ski area. I'm assuming you're talking about Loveland Ski Area. Gary. Scott Barnhart in Lakewood, Colorado. Scott many greenbacks back in 1980. So that does go way back. Dean Wormell has caught many in Rocky Mountain National Park. So good for you, Dean. And we were just up, oh, I got to tell you, we were just up in Rocky Mountain National Park last Sunday. We went up there to listen to the elk.
Roger?
There you are, Jim.
What happened?
I don't know. You dropped off the call, so we've been just killing time waiting for you to come back.
I'm so sorry. I was fine. I'm not sure what happened. I had to call the emergency number to get back on.
Okay.
The other one just stopped working.
Well, we're glad we have you back. I was just filling people in about last Sunday. We were up listening to the elk bugle in Rocky Mountain National Park. And that was quite the experience. I'd never done that.
It was
very interesting. There was one big old bull down there that had about, 20 in his harem there. And by dark, there must have been at least 10 to 12 other bulls that we could just barely see in the darkness coming in trying to, compete for his harem. And I didn't realize it was that competitive up there.
Yeah, I was up there fishing a greenback lake a few weeks ago. Came down, there was an 8-point bull as I was walking out. It's incredible. If you've never heard the elk bugle, it's really something to do.
It was really definitely something. And watching the young ones come in, the young bulls come in to try to get their piece of the action, so to speak, and the big ones chasing them off, and
Good luck with the young ones. The big ones are chasing them out continually.
Oh, yeah. There's a reason they have their harem, that's for sure.
Yep.
Well, anyway, that's what we were doing, killing time.
I was talking and giving this huge answer on the recovery program, and I don't know at what point they dropped me. I don't know. But,
I think what we had been talking about is I had asked you, my last question to you, and I don't even know if you heard it, was, are they trying to reestablish the greenback in a wild form? In other words, stock them to create a wild fishery as opposed to the put-and-take kind of stocking that the rainbows are in?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's definitely want to be a self-sustaining wild population. All fishing for them is catch and release only. It's a threatened species, so as soon as it's caught, you do need to return it to the water. So, that's very important. And that is the goal, to establish this the greenback back in some of its original habitat. Certainly far less than it once, commanded, but definitely to get it back in self-sustaining populations. And we're hoping for about 20 populations on the South Platte and 5 on the Arkansas.
We had, while you were dialing back into, I'd asked the folks that were online to chime in and let me know if they've caught any greenbacks. And a lot of our listeners tonight have caught greenbacks. So.
Yeah, it's a great fish. It's. I'd really recommend everybody get out there and give it a try.
Well, let's talk about competition.
Yeah.
Between the other fish and how that all plays out.
Probably more than anything that sealed the fate of the greenback is competition. You'd think there'd be some home field advantage or home stream advantage, and absolutely not. The cutthroat, in particular the greenback, does not compete against any other trout. When rainbow are introduced into the same area, the problem is that the rainbow and the greenback cutthroat both spawn in the spring. And there's all sorts of hybridization that takes place. And some of you, I'm sure, have caught cutbows. And it's a great fish. I mean, it gets a good size. It's a great fighter. But it takes away the genetic purity of the greenback. So everywhere that there's been rainbow and greenbacks, we soon do not have any greenbacks. Brook trout and brown trout are fall spawners. And what happens, their young of the year get established first and basically outcompete the greenbacks. There's some stories. Black Hollow was a stream in northern Colorado, and they electroshocked it, and they got all of the brook trout out they believed and stocked it with greenbacks. Well, I think it's about 1973 they went in, or excuse me, 1975 they went in and found two brook trout. And then they went back about 3-4 years later, and it was nothing but brook trout. Greenbacks simply cannot compete against the brook trout. And then the brown trout. Brown trout is just much more aggressive. Even in some cases where it's been a smaller fish, it's been proved to be more aggressive. And the greenback simply disappear after, you know, 4 or 5 years when any of these other fish are present. So fish managers, the task is to find waters that do not have any other fish and that have natural barriers to keep other fish out, or to be able to go through and rote known certain sections of the water that they can believe they can take all the fish out of. But the problem, again, is if you don't get 100%, it's been disastrous for the greenback. So it's hard to figure. You think, you know, this is their native water. They've been here 8,000, 10,000 years. How come they don't compete better? But the truth is they're not aggressive to the brook trout or the brown trout.
Yeah, DB in Escondido, California, was asking about whether there are activities to eliminate non-native trout and char species from the lakes and creeks to reestablish greenback trout populations. So they have attempted that, huh? And it's just
And, you know, occasionally if we go in, but pretty much you have to go in with rote known or something to kill all fish in the stream. You've got to be able to do that. We've tried some waters with electroshocking. You know, you go through it and you take out the brook trout and you go through it and take out the brook trout and you go through it and take out the brook trout and then you do it the next year and you do it the next year. And then you set your greenbacks in there. And we come back 5 years later and find out we didn't get, every brook trout, or we didn't get two of them anyway. And sure enough, the brook trout are there. And, you know, another few years, it's only brook trout. So it's very difficult, and you've got to make sure you have good barriers to keep other fish. There's basically got to be a waterfall or a cascade or something that fish can't make it up once you do establish your cutthroat population.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you had mentioned earlier, too, which I was kind of curious about. You said at one point the cutthroat, the greenbacks were out, did you say Fort Collins or Greeley?
Yeah, they went out about that to about 5,000 feet elevation, basically 11,000 feet elevation to about 5,000 feet elevation. We find them have not been very successful in getting greenbacks to spawn above 11,000 feet. Part of the problem is it's a very short summer up there, and by the time they come up and you know to swim out size, they are not able to get established before winter hits. So somewhere around 11,000 feet is probably the limit.
I was more curious about the warm water. Restrictive.
You would think so. And again, that's been a long time. That might have been about 1860 when the first pioneers came out. They may have observed a few that far. But the range maps, the historical range maps, do show them going down to about 5,000 feet elevation. And they certainly, we've been able to raise them, you know, in areas like Fort Carson. They've done some experimental ponds with them, and they do okay. But as far as spawning, in general, you're going to need to find, you know, better habitat than that.
Now, Dennis in Colorado Springs, Colorado, asks, what physical characteristics distinguish greenback from our other two native cutthroat species? Based upon appearance only, can you determine that a fish is a greenback and not a Colorado River or Rio Grande cutthroat?
Well, that's a very good question. I think most of your listeners are probably aware the cutthroat has the two red flashes. That definitely identifies it as a cutthroat. The other thing about the inland cutthroat is they do not have any spots on the top of their heads. Sometimes people confuse the cut bow crosses with the cutthroat. And you'll find any kind of rainbow, they'll have many spots right on the top of their head. Greenback cutthroat do not. But when it comes down to the Colorado River cutthroat and the greenback, there is an awful lot of overlap. Some people say the greenback have the largest spots on their tail of any other cutthroat. That may be, but there's still an awful lot of overlap between the size of the spots that you'll find with the Colorado River cutthroat. Now, the Rio Grande cutthroat spots might be slightly smaller, but we've also found that on the Pecos River headwaters in New Mexico, there's a group of Rio Grande there that have very large spots. And those are very hard to, just look at the morphological characteristics and tell the difference. So I guess the basic answer is very difficult. How we've been telling in the past, the Colorado River cutthroat are the cutthroats on the western slope of Colorado. The greenbacks were on the Front Range, and the Rio Grande were down south. Just that there is a great deal of similarity of characteristics, because all of these are both Rio Grande and the greenback have basically descended from the Colorado River cutthroat. And in evolutionary time, it hasn't been all that many years. It's been a while, but a great deal of overlap. So probably not. We're finding it's difficult, particularly between the Colorado River and the greenback cutthroat, to tell the difference just by looking at it. Nearly impossible.
Now, is the Arkansas have any cutthroats in it?
Absolutely. Yeah. Historically, they did. I'm sorry, what was that?
Which one do they have? Is it the Rio Grande?
No. The Arkansas has the greenback.
They do.
Just to be clear, the greenback occurred and occurs today. The Arkansas drainage and the South Platte drainage. That is greenback habitat. Rio Grande is southern Colorado, going to the Rio Grande River, the San Luis Valley, down into New Mexico.
Okay, good. To differentiate between whether you've got a hybrid or not, basically look for spots on the top of the head, right? If it's got spots,
yep, that's a very
slashes,
good way
then
to
it's a hybrid.
Be able to tell.
Yep, exactly. DB in Escondido, California again, wrote in and he says, as I remember from about 2007 DNA tests that indicated that a stream west of Gunnison had greenbacks in it, which would be on the western slope. Also, the DNA testing had indicated that maybe some of the trout on the Front Range side, maybe actually Colorado River cutthroat trout, or hybridized greenbacks, Colorado River cuts. What is the status on that situation?
Well, DB has hit the $64,000 question when it comes to greenback recovery. And bear with me a little bit. This is a very difficult question, but basically we used to always say, okay, it's on the western slope. We believe it's a Colorado River cutthroat, Front Range is greenback, and down to the south was the Rio Grande. Well, a few years back, about 2006, I'd say, some researchers, University of Colorado, New Mexico State, and Pisces Molecular, came up with genetic tests. They were the mitochondria test, microsatellites, and amplified restriction fragment polymorphism. More genetics than you'll ever want to know. But they came up with these very technical tests and said, guess what? We can tell the genetic difference between those three subspecies of cutthroat. Wow, that's interesting. And so when they looked at the Rio Grande, they found them all to be Rio Grande. And then they looked at the greenbacks and the Colorado, and it got terribly confusing. Just as DB said, we found one population in Gunnison County that turned out to be greenbacks on West Antelope Creek in the Gunnison drainage. And then waters that we were taking eggs from, Hunter's Creek in Colorado on the Front Range, they said, no, these are Colorado River cutthroat. And everybody went, oh my gosh, we've just spent 25 years doing recovery. Have we messed things up? So you can imagine all the biologists, the consternation and things like that. And basically two theories have come out of this. One of the theories of the biologists, such as Dr. Benke, are you familiar with Dr. Benke?
He's, only from your book.
Okay. He is probably, in Fly Fisher magazine, he is probably the foremost trout specialist perhaps in the world. And his take on it is they've only been divergent for, 8,000 years. You are going to find some characteristics of Colorado River trout in some greenback populations. You will find some greenback characteristics that look like greenback in the Colorado. They just haven't been divergent long enough. And they're all on their evolutionary trail. And, eventually they will diverge more. But right now you can't tell the difference, even with your fancy genetic tests. Geneticists are saying, well, we don't think so. We think what happened over the last 130 years is that stocking probably got really messed up. We don't have good stocking records, going back to the 1880s or whatever. Did people take some greenbacks in a bucket or by train or whatever and move them to the western slope? And were Colorado River cutthroats mistakenly planted in some of the streams here? So where there should only be greenbacks, we now may find Colorado River cutthroat. So, like I said, that was back in 2006, and that question is still being batted around. Geneticists, I've heard some pretty strong rumors that a scientific study is going to be coming out in the next month or two from CU geneticists in one of the scientific magazines that's going to address this issue. Some people say perhaps there's only one totally pure population of greenbacks left, and that's in a small creek coming off of Pikes Peak that's positively been identified as greenbacks. And what we've been using in some of our recovery programs are perhaps a mixture of greenback and Colorado River cutthroat. But the answer is no one is totally certain yet what's going on. And it's been a number of years, and I think that's part of the reason, the recovery plan hasn't been updated since 1998 now. It was supposed to have been done several years ago. The National Park is struggling with how to do some of its recovery programs. But as a fisherman, let me tell you, to me it's a greenback. I go up to these high mountain lakes and I fish for them, and it is just the most beautiful fish I have ever caught. And I think
it's funny. If man gets involved, he can surely mess things up. I know people that have taken fish from in buckets, not here in Colorado, but like in Wisconsin, where they wanted to put some sunfish or something in their own little pond, and so they literally carry them in buckets from one fishery to another. So I'm sure that went on, and I'm sure there might have been some planes that were on the wrong side of the divide when they dumped a bunch of fish into a lake, they got downstream or something like that too. So all kinds of things happened.
I think we have pretty good records for the last few decades, but I think, early on, who knows what happened. So there's some real question about that. I mean, a lot of think, it looks like a greenback, it swims like a greenback, it takes a fly like a greenback, let's call it a greenback. And so it has people scratching their heads. The science has gotten so complicated and so good, like I said, 5-6 years ago, this wasn't even a question.
Right.
And now people are saying, wow, so what is a pure greenback? What is a pure Colorado River cutthroat? And some people are just saying, we're just going to call it, it's a cutthroat. It's a Colorado cutthroat, not Colorado River or greenback. We just have Colorado cutthroat in these lakes and rivers. So it's going to be very interesting to see where this all comes out.
Right, right. What size do the cutthroats get?
Specifically, to talk about the greenbacks a little bit. In a lot of the smaller streams, the real high streams, 6-8 inches is about all you see. They'll be growing fairly small. I think in all the years I've been fishing for them, the longest or the biggest one I caught was about 17 inches. There are stories of, they used to be perhaps bigger in historic times. We do know that Lytle Pond down at Fort Carson, they stock some pure greenbacks down there. And within 3 or 4 years, they got to be about 4 pounds, about 20 inches. And there was, perhaps Arkansas darters in their diet and crayfish and some things that, really allowed them to get bigger. But in general, if you catch a 17-inch pure greenback, that is a big fish.
A trophy.
Chris Kennedy, who's been running the greenback recovery program up in the national park for years, I'd say, you know, probably at least a decade now, I think the largest he's reported is about 17 and a half inches for a greenback when you, you know, truly measure it, because he truly measurements. I mean, I catch a fish and say, oh, I think that was 14 inches, but I don't necessarily take out my ruler, right?
Right. Yeah.
Chris does, and he says, you know, that 17 and a half, 18 inches. Lily Lake, which is a recreational lake stocked with greenbacks, that does have some reported fish of 18, 19 inches in there.
Really?
So perhaps
Lily
they
Lake.
Get a little bit bigger in there. Yeah.
Lily's the one just outside of the park there, right?
Yeah, it's actually in the park. The park has expanded to bring Lily into it, but it's right off the road.
Yeah. That's where they did the fly fishing championship. That was one of their venues one year.
The
lake fishing was Lily Lake. But
and that is, if you want to fish greenbacks, I tell people you better like to hike. Because for the most part, they're in the high country and put on your hiking boots. But Lily Lake is one of the exceptions. Right there on the side of the road. Parking lot, take your belly boat, and you can go fishing for them.
Silas Gray wrote in on the internet here. He's from Joplin, Missouri. He said he caught his first cutthroat last week in Anthracite Creek near Marble, Colorado. Was that a greenback?
Probably a Colorado River cutthroat.
Yeah.
Marble, he's on the western slope. I would bet it's probably a Colorado River cutthroat, which is very close. If he's caught one of those, he has a pretty good idea of what a greenback looks like.
Yeah. Let's see. We have some other questions. Let me see. Well, we'll get to Gary's question. He's asking about where are they most concentrated, what river drainages. But let's talk about that later when we actually talk about different locations. Andrew from Ann Arbor, Michigan, wants to know, in the recent forest fires in Colorado, has that affected any of the cutthroat streams or rivers?
I think it is certainly possible. A lot of those fires, though, were lower down. Most of our cutthroat are higher up. The Rocky Mountain National Park is, you know, really the epicenter of greenback cutthroat recovery and fishing. Those fires did not occur there. So for the most part, the greenbacks were unscathed. There are a few streams in lower Larimer County that I think may have been impacted that do have some greenbacks. But you know, fortunately, knock on wood, Rocky Mountain National Park did not catch fire this summer, and that is really where the action is with the greenbacks.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about food and flies. What do the greenbacks primarily feed on?
Well, you know, no significant differences than you'd find for brook trout. The rainbow trout, you know, basically, they're going to be taking all sorts of invertebrate insects and terrestrials. Some of the studies that have been done have found that during, you know, the late summer, a large part of their diet becomes terrestrials. And some of the most amazing fishing that I've had for anything has been greenback fishing using grasshoppers. It was a couple of years ago. I was up on a high mountain lake in Rocky Mountain National Park, and we were fishing grasshoppers. And nearly every cast, we were catching something between, you know, 11 and 14-inch greenback was coming up. And it's interesting because you don't see a lot of grasshoppers at some of these lakes up around 11,000 feet. But the greenback, for some reason, can simply not help itself when presented with a grasshopper in late summer, it appears. But other than that, you know, a whole variety of flies. Some of them that I really like are the, you know, the parachute atoms, I guess, is one that comes to mind. I often will start with that one. Done very well. The blue wing olive, and a lot of these, you know, 14, 16 size. And the greenback just readily will come up to a fly. Griffith's gnats, at times, you know, I've used, yellow humpies, royal wolves, I've also caught them occasionally on streamers, muddler minnows. Pretty much what you've got in your fly box, caddis, is going to work fairly well with these.
Sounds like they're, when you say like brook trout, which are very opportunistic feeders. We did a show with Tom Rosenbauer from Orvis on small stream fishing, and what he brought out in that show was, like with the brook trout, you know, there's not a lot of hatches in these small streams. There's just not the ecosystem for these big hatches we get on our bigger rivers. And so consequently, he said, you know, a lot of the brook trout just, they'll eat anything, you know. It's food.
Yeah, they're up, they seem to be very opportunistic.
That's
absolutely
sounds
true.
Like the greenbacks are very similar in their nature of because of the where they live is maybe forces them into being opportunistic.
Yeah, and Dr. Benke has come up with a vulnerability index and says that the greenback is about 3 times more likely to come up to fly than even a brook trout.
Oh gosh!
So, and we've all been brook trout fishing. Say, wow! There's been some tests that have been done where there's been more brook trout than greenbacks, and yet the fishermen will catch greenbacks 2-1 over the brook trout. So the vulnerability index is quite high for greenbacks and coming up. And I say that, but you know, at times, it's also, you hear how easy they may be to catch, and they'll come up, look at your fly, and just swim away. So, in that case, change flies, ants sometimes work well. Griffith's gnat, when they're not taking flies, will often work good. Beetles, sometimes. The terrestrials, especially late summer, give the terrestrials a try. Grasshoppers, ants, beetles, all can work fantastically well on these high mountain lakes.
What do you take for a, what size rod and weight rod do you take up for your fishing streams?
Most of the time I'm going up with a 5-weight, I would say. A lot of these high mountain lakes, afternoon you can get some wind. You get some breeze, and I like to have a 5-weight that I can, you know, punch that line out there a ways. Now some of the smaller streams that I'll fish that have greenbacks in them, you know, they're fairly small, I like to take a 2-weight, and that's a lot of fun. Boy, a greenback can put a real bend in a 2-weight.
It just
depends, but if you're going to be fishing, you know, the high mountain lakes, et cetera, I'd say the 5-weight, 5X and 6X tippet. You know, I don't find them to be particularly tippet shy, but again, they're not real big, and you know, you can pretty well land them on 6X tippet, but 5X tippet also works well.
Okay. Chuck in Buffalo, New York, want to know if you use bamboo for greenbacks.
Boy, I wish I had. I don't own a bamboo rod, but I think it would be perfect. I know somebody that has gone up to these lakes with a bamboo rod and said it was fantastic. Yeah, if he's got one and he's coming out from Buffalo, the chief researcher on greenbacks here in Colorado is from Buffalo, New York, so he might be able to get some tips from him,
Chris
Kennedy. But, yeah, I would definitely pack that bamboo rod if he's got it. Like I said, you know, a 5-weight for most of the lakes, because you can get some breeze, you need a little something behind it, but the streams, the smaller streams, you know, 2-3 weight can be a lot of fun to fish with.
Right, right. And we had, of course, one of our sponsors tonight is Tenkara, and before the show I'd asked you about that. You hadn't used that system yet, but I think that might be a good system for these greenbacks, too.
You know, I think it would probably work very well. To tell you a story, somebody I know went up to one of these lakes, and you know, you hike up there sometimes 4 or 5 miles, and he got up there and he forgot his reel. It happens. And so he tied a, you know, he had a five-weight, nine-foot fly rod. He tied a leader onto the end and tied a little extra tippet on it and used that. And he outfished most of us. did, you know, fantastic with that. So I would think that if you could do that, the Tenkara system would be great for greenbacks, and
right.
particularly, you know, on the streams.
Right.
A lot of the casting is not, you don't have to make, you know, really difficult or long casts. So I think it'd be fun to give it a try.
Yeah.
I hope to do that someday.
Yeah. Do you, as far as the habitat, you mentioned streams and lakes, do you find greenbacks more in one or the other, and is there one you prefer than the other?
Well, you know, it's an interesting question. I think in general, I like fishing streams, but for greenbacks, I think I maybe prefer the lakes. They're very interesting in the lakes. You come up to one of these high mountain lakes, the water is just, you know, crystal clear. And what the greenbacks do is they cruise that shoreline. And it is so fun. I mean, you're standing there casting, and you can just watch them, and they will just come cruising right along the shore towards you. And you're just throwing that fly out there in front of them and waiting for them to come under it. They spot it. You watch the whole thing. You watch them come from, you know, 15 feet away. They see that little parachute atoms or hopper, whatever you're using. They come underneath it and bam, they're on. It is exciting fishing. It's sight fishing on lakes, cause they're rising and just continually, groups of them are cruising the shoreline. If you don't see one, just wait a few minutes. They'll come cruising by looking for insects right along the shore. So, I guess for greenbacks, I may prefer lakes, but for, in general, I always thought I liked streams, but, it's just so much fun to go out there on a high mountain lake.
Exciting, yeah. Well, we need to, Jim, take a quick 30-second break here, so I'll be right back, and we'll talk more about fishing for greenbacks and also locations to go to. So stick with us, folks. Harper Creek Fly Fishing Company is North Carolina's premier backcountry fly fishing guide service. Located in Lenoir, North Carolina, at the base of the Blue Ridge Mountains, they fish some of the most beautiful limestone spring creeks North Carolina has to offer. Their guide has over 15 years of professional experience, and in addition to the backcountry guide service for experienced anglers, they offer intensive full-day instructional trips for the novice angler. So go spend a day with them in fly fishing paradise. For more information on their services, please visit www.nc-flyfishing.com. That's nc-flyfishing.com. Or call them at 828-758-2446. That's 828-758-2446. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We're talking with Jim Rubin about Colorado's greenback cutthroat trout. If you'd like to ask Jim a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use our Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Okay, Jim, are there any tips? You just gave a couple of tips on fishing for greenbacks, but are there anything else that you'd like to share with folks about fly fishing?
A couple things. You know, we say they're not particularly wary when it comes to taking dry flies. They quite often rise easily to a fly, more so than a brown trout or a rainbow. But that doesn't mean they don't spook easy. one of the things I've learned about fishing these high mountain lakes is always assume when you're coming up to the lake, there's a greenback right there. I can't tell you how many times I started out fishing. I'd walk up to the lake and spook some really nice ones, because there they were cruising. As you come up to the lake, be very quiet. You know, if you're into the lake or drop your fly off the shore, assume there's a fish there, because there's a fairly good chance that one will be cruising by at that very moment. So get into, you know, very, very quietly. And then, you know, keep your eyes peeled for a rising fish. If you don't see one right now, they're going to be moving towards you in most of these lakes. Put that fly out there, maybe 10, 15 feet in front of where you think it's going to be, it's heading, and there's a very good chance that it's going to be coming underneath it. And like I said, some days they're going to look at it and swim on by. Then try something else. You know, if the one didn't work, you know, try a terrestrial, try an ant, try a hopper, blue wing olive, the parachute atoms. Griffith's gnat has worked a lot of times for me when other dry flies weren't, putting that out. I've caught a lot of fish on the Griffith's gnat as well. So be willing to change flies when you need to. And occasionally you have to go small. There's a couple of lakes that, you know, the little midges are required. But you're going to have a good time. It is just the best time I think I've had fly fishing is going to some of these lakes and going after the greenbacks.
What about the current fishing regulations? I think you talked about this a little bit before for greenbacks, but is that statewide a consistent regulation, or does it differ?
Well, it's pretty much statewide. It is a threatened species. Certainly recommend that in almost all areas I've been, you're asked to put them back. There is one exception I've seen down in the Leadville, Arkansas area. I think it's Timberline Lake and Virginia Lake. The sign says that you can keep two greenbacks, and that may have been an experimental program they're putting in place to get people interested in hiking into those lakes. I'm not sure. But I'd say unless you see something like that, always assume that you need to put the fish back. And I would also like to recommend that you use a barbless hook. Some studies have been done of the greenback populations, and they found, I know on one lake, like 25% of the greenbacks were found to have jaw deformities, damage as a result of barbed hooks. So, you know, just for the to help these fish out, pinch that barb down if you don't have a barbless hook, or tie your flies with a barbless hook, because it does make a difference.
Okay, let's talk. We've got just a few minutes left here, and I want to kind of run through in your book you broke down the different drainages and areas in Colorado that the greenbacks are in, and I was wondering if you could kind of highlight each one of those areas and, you know, maybe tell us a couple of the favorite locations you have in that area. And
sure.
Also, why don't you just kind of tell people about how they could use your book for these areas to get, you know, the best result as far as looking for the greenback. That might be helpful to the folks, too.
Yeah. Yeah, let me plug the book just a second. We talk about how to fish for them, the biology, the history, tips for fishing, and all this genetics and all the types of things we've discussed already. But also, it talks about all of these recovery waters that are catch-and-release waters, where they are, how to get there, how hard of a hike it is, where camping is, the elevation. Some of you from lower areas may be interested in that, and how hard the difficult is. And also we rate it. We rated each of these waters from 1 to 5. And, you know, that's a bit subjective, and I think it can probably change. But most of the waters in the book we've fished numerous times. We've gone back a lot of times over the years, and talked to other fishermen too, not just our experiences, but our friends that go up there and fish those, and fishermen that we've encountered. And we're also part of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service volunteer program that goes into these lakes to do surveys, looking at the population of the greenbacks in these different lakes. So based on all of our information, we've rated each of the lakes from 1 to 5. So that gives you some indication, but your experience may be different, and, you know, that changes over time. It certainly does. So,
right.
But it at least gives you a place to start
sure.
on each of the lakes that have we know have greenbacks in it. So
well,
it can be useful if you want to do that.
Yeah, let's kind of just kind of give them a tour of the areas. You've got the national park, which you said is kind of the premier place to be looking for greenbacks, right?
Absolutely, no question. If you want to catch greenback, go to Rocky Mountain National Park. Estes Park side. This is where the best greenback fishing, I would say, in the state occurs. It's certainly been our experience. And we've rated several of those waters as 5s. You know, unless conditions are really strange, you have an excellent opportunity to having a good fish day at these lakes that we rated 4 or 5. So, you want me to start kind of on the north? I guess you had done some hiking this weekend.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it's as you alluded to earlier, altitude and bring your hiking boots, because I was just up in one of the areas that you highlighted in your book up there, Lost Lake area, and I think Lost Lake was like 9.2 miles in or something.
Yeah, it's just about 10. And I'll admit, I did go in with the Fish and Wildlife Service and cheated a little bit. They had mules carry in all our fishing equipment.
Aww.
Back, so we didn't have to carry it out, but they did carry it in for us. So I was very thankful for that because we had a lot of equipment we had to bring in. We stayed out there for about a week. So, but up in that area are some fantastic waters. Lake Husted, 10.25 miles in, just over 11,000 feet in elevation. Some concern that we're going to be able to maintain that greenback fishery because we don't know if there's good enough spawning areas. But we were up there a couple years ago. The fishing was fantastic. Just consistently catching nice fish one after the other. So that is one that I highly recommend. And then the other one is Lake Louise. And probably one of my two or three favorites in the entire park is Lake Louise. The bad news is it's 10.7 miles in. It's at 11,000 feet. But this is an incredible fishery. And has some of the biggest greenbacks that we've caught in the park. I did catch one of right around 17 inches up there. It's 1 mile due west of Lost Lake. So do take your GPS or some good maps or guide when you go up there, because it's a good hike up there in fairly rugged country. But
those are both areas you'd want to backpack into and stay a day or two.
Definitely. Yeah, and you might find, a llama trip or something like that as well. So
yeah.
I'd recommend it. You'd probably go in that way, or if you're a strong hiker, go for it, because it is an amazing experience to go into that area. But it is some of the furthest in greenback waters that we talked about in the book.
Now, that's up in the northern part of the park. What about in the central part of the park?
Yes, some of the central has just fantastic Roaring River, and that's one that's just right outside of Estes Park there. You can get to fairly easily. We rated a 5. It is a great, I was saying I like lakes in general better, but that is one of the rivers that is really fun to fish. Get there early. A lot of guides take their customers up there, or get a guide in Estes Park. That can be a really fun way to do it. We classify it as one of the best greenback fisheries in the park. So you don't really need waders on it. You can skip around quite a bit on the rocks. There's a lot of holding water. If you like fishing streams and holding water, at times it seems like there's a greenback behind every rock there. So it's an interesting one. You may recall the Lawn Lake flood back in 1982. Do you recall that, Roger?
No,
dam broke up above it, and a lot of big boulders came rushing down there. So it's an interesting piece of water and in history for the national park. And then up above that is Lawn Lake, and Lawn Lake is also rated a 5. We've had some good fishing there, again, on hoppers and on ants. It's 6 miles in. We've done that as a day trip. You can also camp overnight up there, or there's llamas can take you in with guides. But it's an excellent one. Crystal Lake is up above it. May have some of the biggest fish in the park, but not a lot of them. It's so high, we're really concerned that it may not be getting much spawning activity. It's at 11,500 feet. But what views there are up there. And it's just incredible.
And you mentioned Lily Lake earlier, which is just off the road. I mean, literally, you can see it from the road.
Yeah, Lily Lake, that can be good. Use scuds, bring scuds, and use damselfly nymphs. And bring your belly boat. It's right there by the parking lot. So, Lily Lake is a great one to fish as well.
Then Wild Basin?
Wild Basin. That's really an interesting part of the park. We did go to the Hutchinson Lakes up there. Upper Hutchinson may have the most greenbacks of any lake in the park. I was just up there a few weeks ago, but I will tell you, I did a day trip. And I hiked in 4 hours, fished 2 hours, caught 20 greenbacks, and then hiked out 4 hours. So it was a long day to fish, but you know what? It was worth it. I thought the fishing was fantastic. It's a beautiful, beautiful lake.
4 hours.
Upper Hutchison. Sorry?
4 hours in. Yeah, that's quite the...
Yeah, it's a good... It's a pretty good hike up there. It took us about 4 hours to get in. Fished for a couple, two and a half, and then hiked out another 4 hours. So I don't recommend you necessarily do that. You might want to camp at Pear Lake, and then it's just a mile or so up there. But that is a good one.
And then you've got a section on the South Platte drainage outside the park. And,
yeah, I think... There's a couple, but I think a couple other ones worth mentioning that I just want to talk about in the park is Fern Lake. Fern Lake, one of the early projects, is just a fantastic fishery, about 3.6 miles in. I did that just a couple weeks ago also. Unfortunately, I got up there and then it rained the next 5 hours, but usually the fishing is quite good. And then Loomis Lake, up above there, is probably my favorite also in the park. Fantastic fishery. Trails, you know, take a GPS or have a good map, you know, do some study to know how to get up there. The book does have directions on how to get up there. But what an incredibly beautiful views from up there. And I guess this is one of the things, Roger, I like the most about greenbacks is they live in such incredible places. The beauty of these lakes I'm talking about is, you know, just amazing. So, boy, if you like to hike at all, the greenback is definitely a fish to go after.
Okay. And then the South Platte outside the park?
Yeah, the only one there that, a lot of those waters, Black Hollow, Cornelius, George, Roaring Fork, there's been some competition, problems in some of these with, brook trout and other trout. Roaring Fork Creek, can be fun. And then Zimmerman Lake, that was recently restocked. It had been stocked with greenbacks. They found were concerned about the genetics, and so they eliminated all those fish and restocked it, and actually haven't been up there since then. But that is a fun lake to fish. It's only about a mile hike in, but it is pretty steep incline. And
right.
You're likely to see moose up there. Boy, there's a lot of moose in that northern Colorado area. I don't think I've ever been in there that I haven't come across a moose. So
I thought... It's been years now since I've been into Zimmerman Lake, but I went in there for grayling.
Me too. That's when I first fished it. It was a really hot grayling lake. Yeah, that's moved now down to Joe Wright, and they took all the grayling out, put greenbacks in, and it's now
a
greenback water. So,
okay.
Yeah, just like you. I used to fish it for grayling.
Yeah, yeah. One of the few places in Colorado that you get grayling at the time. Yeah. And then... the interstate I-70 corridor. In fact, while you were redialing in, one of our listeners had written in and said that he's caught him in Clear Creek up there by the ski area. So.
Yeah, that's exactly right. The upper Clear Creek area. And this is another one that's not a huge hike. It's right off of I-70, like you're going to Loveland Ski Area up there.
Mm-hmm.
Fishing can be pretty good up there. I just want an easy day out from the Denver area anyway. It's I know from my house, it takes me about 50 minutes to get there. And, I've caught several greenbacks on Clear Creek, and there's also Dry Gulch in that area that has a few greenbacks in it. So there are some opportunities outside of the park as well.
And then what about the Arkansas drainage?
Yeah, the Arkansas, it's not doing, I would say, as well as... the Rocky Mountain National Park area. There are some waters. Rock Creek near the Leadville hatchery is probably one of my favorites down there. You start right at the hatchery and move upstream there, and the first couple miles, there's some fairly good greenback fishing in there. So I would recommend going into that one. It's probably your best opportunity.
And then south from there, the basin, Arkansas Basin.
Yeah. For the most part, I'd say hold off on that for right now.
Yeah.
We need to get a little bit better established. you're going to have better luck at some of the other areas we've talked about, particularly in the National Park and the South Platte Basin. It promises some of the best fishing.
Good. Well, we just really whipped through that, Jim, but for you folks out there that want to pursue the greenback, you really should get Jim's book. And because for each of those areas, we only mentioned, you know, one or two fisheries within each of those areas, and he's got them all detailed out here. So lots and lots to explore, and the details about each one of those areas is in his book, which is going to be real helpful to you. So anyway, get his book, and you get it from Amato, or I'm sure also on Amazon. And any other places, can they get them directly from you, Jim?
Or? Yeah, some of the fly fishing shops here in Colorado carry it. But, you know, Barnes & Noble and Amazon.com, you can get it there, sure.
Okay, good. Well, we've run out of time, and worked out just perfectly tonight. So we need to wrap things up here, and stick with me here, Jim, because we're going to do some giveaways here, including a copy of your book.
Well, thanks so much. I really enjoyed it. This is great to be able to talk about the greenbacks.
Yeah, well, it is. It's a lot of fun, and I think everybody's much more educated now than they were about what they're all about. So stick with me, Jim. I'll be right back, and we'll give away membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and a one-year subscription to Fly Fusion magazine and a copy of Jim's book, Colorado Greenback Cutthroat Trout. So we'll be right back. The Bristol Bay region of southwest Alaska is home to the largest runs of wild salmon on the planet and some of the best trophy rainbow trout fishing found anywhere. The Pebble Mine still remains a threat to the region, and 2 million acres of federal lands may be also at risk. The entire fly fishing industry is united in this epic conservation battle. Anglers from across the country are joining the fight. Be one of them. Visit SaveBristolBay.org, where you can learn more about how you can get involved. Again, that's www.SaveBristolBay.org. Just a reminder to everyone, before you leave the website tonight, please take a minute and give us your feedback about the show. You can find a link on our homepage in the section under tonight's show. It's what did you think of the show. Just click on the link, leave your comments, and we'd really appreciate it. Okay, well, it's time to give away our gifts through our drawing. And the way that you can get into the database for this is to fill out the section on our homepage where it says for our registration database. So if you want to register in the future, go ahead and register there. It's going to be too late tonight for this drawing, but next time be sure you do that in advance, and you'll have a chance to win one of these. Now, if you are one of the lucky winners, we'll send you the information on getting your prize by email. So, well, let's give away that first one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers. And if you don't know about the Federation, go to fedflyfishers.org. Fedflyfishers.org. They're a great organization to be part of. Do a lot of conservation efforts. I'm sure you'll love being a member. Our winner there is Russ Stevenson. And Russ is in Pennsylvania. So congratulations, Russ, on that one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers. And now we'll give away the one-year subscription to Fly Fusion magazine. And this, too, is just a great resource to learn more about fly fishing. And our winner there is Dale Barr in Montana. So congratulations, Dale, on winning that one-year subscription to the Fly Fusion magazine. And for those of you that didn't win, go to flyfusionmag.com, flyfusionmag.com, and you can learn all about that publication. It's a great one to be subscribed to. Okay. Now, Jim, we're going to give away your book, Colorado Greenback Cutthroat Trout, courtesy of Frank Amato Publications, and that's www.amatobooks.com. And let's see here. The question will be, Gary in Lakewood, Colorado, wants to know where in Denver he can get your book. Do you know any of the fly shops in Denver that he can first stop right offhand?
Charlie's Fly Box, I was there recently. They had a copy of it up in Nevada.
Oh, that's just up the road from Lakewood. It's Gary's in Lakewood. So, yeah, Charlie's is just downtown Old Arvada there. So you might call Charlie up, see if he's
got it. I think the Barnes & Noble in Lakewood also, off of I-70 there, that one also carries it.
Okay, so there you go, Gary. Try one of those two and see what you can find. Okay, or you might be able to win here, Gary. Pay attention. Okay, two things. Well, this is kind of a two-part question. We've been talking about the greenback cutthroat trout tonight. There were two other cutthroats, types of cutthroats in Colorado. Name those two and tell me, is the greenback a spring spawner or a fall spawner? So I'm looking for three pieces of information there. Two other cutthroat that are native to Colorado and springer fall spawner. Okay.
Good question.
And boy, somebody's quick to the draw here. Tell me, Jim, if he's got this. He says Rio Grande, Colorado River. So those are our two fish, right?
Right.
And he says a spring spawner.
He is correct in all three parts of that.
Yeah, way to go. And that was Jake Jones in Yukon, Oklahoma. So, Jake, you're going to have to get this book and come to Colorado and fish for these greenbacks. You'll be all set.
Absolutely.
Congratulations. Yeah. So, Jake, I'm going to need a couple more bits of information, like your mailing address. So shoot your mailing address back over in that same box, and then I'll be all set to go. I got your name and your email address, and we'll get that book sent out to you from Amato Publications. So congratulations. Congratulations. Well, Jim, hey, we really appreciate you being with us tonight. It was just lots of fun talking about these greenbacks, and thanks for sharing all your experience. And I can tell you put in a lot of miles to write this book.
Yeah, a lot of hours. It's tough work, but somebody had to do it, right?
Yeah, so it had
well,
to be
I really enjoyed tonight, Roger. Thanks. Thank you very much.
Yeah, well, thanks for being with us. And folks, hopefully you've all found our archive on our website. If you haven't, there are a couple links on our homepage and links at the bottom of every page, the archive, where you can find all our past shows. We've got over 150 shows now in the archive. And you can type in a keyword phrase like trout, tarpon, greenback, cutthroat, Madison River, Bighorn, whatever you're looking for, and see if you can find shows on it. I think you'll be pleasantly surprised. So go ahead and explore that. Our next broadcast will be on October 3rd, 7 p.m. Mountain, 9 p.m. Eastern. And on that show, we'll interview Aaron Adams. And our topic for the show will be Think Like a Fish, Catch More Tarpon, Bonefish, and Permit. Aaron is a marine biologist, and he understands the habits that the warm water coastal saltwater game fish live in. And knowing something about a fish's life cycle and the behavior patterns will give you a better idea of when and where you're most likely to find fish. So listen in, find out how you can think like a fish to catch more fish. We'd like to thank the Federation of Fly Fishers, Fly Fusion Magazine, Tenkara USA, Housatonic River Outfitters, and Harper Creek Fly Fishing Company for sponsoring our show tonight. If you think your company would benefit from sponsoring one of our shows, give us a call at 1-800-985-1673 extension 8. That's 1-800-985-1673 extension 8. We'll be happy to explain the options available to you. Don't forget to visit our website at askaboutflyfishing.com and make sure you're signed up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone, and good fishing.